鬼岛之音
Ghost Island Media。
Harry Wu is a medical doctor and a historian, an MD and a PhD. He's designed and led the humanities programs at top medical schools in Asia. First in 2013 at the Nanyang Technology University in Singapore. And 2 years later, he went to Hong Kong and became the director of the Medical Ethics and Humanities at the University of Hong Kong. He since moved back to Taiwan. In 2021, his first English academic book, Mad by the Millions, Mental Disorders and the Early Years of the World Health Organization, was published by MIT Press. And you could tell by the title, his research focus is on the histories of mental health disorders. Dr. Wu is known for his approach to the history of medicine, but off campus, or sometimes on campus, he's also known for his musical talent. He's a songwriter and a pianist. If you're based in Taiwan and can attend one of Harry Wu's talks, I definitely recommend it. Hope you enjoy this conversation. What you're about to hear is the podcast edition of Game Changers with Emily Y. Wu, where I speak with emerging leaders. Individuals I have gotten to know in the last several years. These are the fresh faces of Taiwan you must get to know. They are young, they're cool, they're hip. They are changing the world, starting in Taiwan. This is The Taiwan Take. I'm your host, Emily Y. Wu. Welcome to a new conversation of Game Changers. And after today's episode, if you want to see a video version, head on over to YouTube. We'll have a link in the show notes. Hey, welcome.
Hi, Emily.
So good to have you. So you're a historian of medicine, and particularly the intersection of how it's related to society, technology, and culture.
Yeah.
Your focus is on mental disorders, mental health, and what in the old days, we understood it as madmen, lunatics. So just as a first question, before we get into the details of what you study and how you do it, take us through a little bit and explain kind of how we've understood mental illness over the past century and kind of where we are now.
So in the past, that we understood mental illness as something that is abnormal or something that is related to, for example, like possession. Right, so it's got some supernatural forces, right? But nowadays, we're now living in a society that we understand mental illness is disassociated with some dysfunctioning of our brain, right? And also, we are now living in a world that allows us to be a little bit different. And the way we understand mental illness is already very different now.
And a part of, I think, what you do, and it's really interesting, is putting the humanities programs into medical schools. Why is it important for medical professionals to be studying humanities?
Yeah, I would say that this is a fake issue.
A fake issue. Okay.
Because a long time ago, let's say like 2000 years ago, when the father of modern medicine, his name is Hippocrates, he said, Ars longa, vita brevis, that means skill set. Skill sets are very difficult to cultivate, to understand. That means, what do we need to understand then? It's actually the human condition. Right, so it really takes very long training for us to understand. We have to bear in mind that medicine hasn't really become so scientific until the turn between the 19th and 20th century. So now let's say that in 1970s, some medical schools are beginning to experiment some programs to re-educate medical school students with humanities and social sciences skills.
Then in that case, all studies of medicine should include studies of the society.
Yeah, society is one thing. History, sociology, anthropology, these are resources for modern time medical students to learn. Yeah, you can say that. Actually, in our field, medical history or STS, science, technology, and society. Okay. We don't see science as science itself, mm-hmm. right? Or we don't even see a scientific method as scientific, right? It can be a cultural artifact. And scientific method is actually a cultural process, right? So studying science is actually studying a society
okay.
that has an impact mm-hmm. on the subject.
one of your research is on Hong Kong.
Yeah.
It's called Sad Waters, Hong Kong and its Lunatics. You spent quite a long time in Hong Kong teaching and living there.
That was 6 years.
Yeah, you established your life there.
Yeah.
Until you came back recently.
Yeah. Okay. So this story about Hong Kong is that most scholars talking about the history of psychiatry, they focus on institutions. That means mental asylums, right?
Mm.
But my approach is very different. It's very interesting that Hong Kong is a borrowed place in the borrowed time, right?
A borrowed place in the borrowed time.
In the borrowed time.
Referring to the time that it was under British colonialism or referring to...
You can say that. And actually everything happening in Hong Kong is about prosperity, mm-hmm. about development.
Mm-hmm.
And so very different from other society is that the people really want to prevent these people who look different, these people who have potentially have mental illness, they to touch base.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they found these people in the street, they'll send them away, right? So they will be repatriated back to maybe China or to Europe through London, right? So these lunatics, and so they will be drifting in the ocean. Right, so very different from being confined in institutions. So I'm simply writing the story of drift. These historical stories are epitomes of our society, so we can see ourselves by looking at these strange things that are already happening in the world. I always say that I'm a historian of madness, and now if you look at history, you can find that things happening in the history are way more wayward, crazier, much crazier than what we can imagine.
You have lessons on cult leaders as well.
Yeah, yeah, of course. So about cult leaders, when there is a crisis in the society or in some culture, we always expect someone there to lead us, to give us some guidance. And so in a way, we are not really looking at how crazy this person is. We're actually looking at the society, why we demand a leader, why we demand a master, a 师父, right? So this is all about the society itself.
In a study like that, do you come to a conclusion as to how different eras understand that? What is the contemporary modern need right now?
Modern need, you just see how many masters in Taiwan, you know how hallowed we are in our heart and how much we need someone we think that has more wisdom to for us to project our imagination, our wish onto, right?
I want to turn the page to history when there's a crisis. Brings me to 1948, which was the year that the WHO was founded, World Health Organization, which your last book was about.
Yeah.
You explored how the WHO at the time was trying to organize a systematic way of categorizing mental disorders.
Exactly.
And the significance being that was the very first time the world saw a global body of the studies of medicine, everybody working together at the same time to create.
Yeah. Oh my God, you actually explained my book so well. Right. So that was the time when people realized that there was a huge, we can say that a free-floating anxiety among people, because the humanity had already suffered from the devastation of the Second World War, right? We had two atomic bombing, the Holocaust in Germany. So it was actually the humanity was suffering, and scientists, they also agreed on that. So there was a collective hunch agreeing that we human beings, we are all potential to develop something. But the first thing is, how do we understand mental illness universally? So scientists, they thought that we need a universal language for the purpose of communication. We need to understand whether or not these mental illnesses are the same in the world.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right? After proving that, then we can now develop a language to describe these different conditions so that we can do research. And after research, we can study how to treat these people.
Because like other types of medicine, our human bodies should behave in the same way.
Like infectious diseases. If you say COVID-19, although these symptoms evolved, but at the beginning, they look similar, right? But mental illness is something like a piece of cloud in the sky, right? You don't know how to describe it, and it can maybe manifest differently in different cultures.
Did it work, the attempt to categorize that by the WHO? Because there's another set of standardization by another organization.
Oh, yeah, right. Actually, did it work? That's a very complex issue. Uh-huh. In the 1970s, the conclusion made by the WHO was very conservative. They only proved that international collaborations in science was possible. Right.
In the 70s, okay.
In the 70s. Was possible, right. And they did standardize the international classification of diseases. I mean, the mental illness chapter, right? Mm-hmm. But then there was a lot of challenge, right? And like nowadays, when people talk about global mental health, there are still societies which do not understand these mental disorders that well. Mm. There are still places where they don't have enough resources. They don't have psychiatrists. They know what psychiatry is, but they don't have services.
So then if the stress test of the last century was the reorganization of the world after World War II, the other stress test of this century, possibly the global pandemic, COVID-19.
Exactly. Right.
How has COVID-19 transformed science?
Science itself? Actually, I have two answers. First, it accelerated the scientific practice. For example, like nowadays, we all have some jabs, right? Vaccines, mm-hmm. like mRNA vaccines. So before the global pandemic, the mRNA vaccine was still something that it was in the laboratory, right? Mm-hmm. But now the crisis has accelerated the development. And now the rollout of the vaccine was in the speed that we could not imagine in the past, right? And the second thing is that you can actually observe that at the beginning of the 21st century, science was a competitive business. All these scientists say they want to secure grants, they want to secure their fame, right? So actually these scientists, they are competing with one another, right? But this pandemic has taught us that we should really refocus on the very basic, conventional, original nature of science is universality. Is that we develop science for people in the world. The crisis has stimulated more collaboration among nations, right? Okay. And it's all about transparency of data, information. This is how COVID transformed the field of science.
What about on the study of mental health after COVID? Now let's throw in mental health in that mix as well.
Yeah, this is another complex issue. Now, people are talking about the impact of COVID-19, whether or not it can produce long COVID that evolves some mental symptoms. Mm-hmm. But this is another chapter. Now, before COVID-19, people were already talking about global mental health, was that people experience mental illness differently. Sometimes these symptoms are caused socially, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, no, we are not mentally sick, but after locking down for a period, you feel very distressed, right? Depressed, right? So in a way, yes, of course, it impacts a lot on mental health.
Going through COVID and noticing that for the first time in my life, everybody was going through the same experience. All of a sudden, everybody in the world were experiencing the same type of isolation.
Yeah.
But going back to this, the question of working together, collaborative work, put in that context of the balance between international collaboration and particular local challenges, how is that changing the study of mental health around the world right now?
All right. Not only about mental health, I would say any aspect of health. Mm. Now, maybe we can talk about the WHO again. People say that this organization, under the crisis, it seems that it looks very crippled, right? It cannot really do things smoothly, right? But we need to bear in mind that at the very beginning of its creation, 1948, it already was already operating not in one world. It's an imagined one world, but it actually, all these programs under the framework of United Nations, they were highly, highly political. Let's say in the 1990s, that there was a huge menace of the humanity, which was HIV-related disease.
Okay.
Now we have a WHO, but the global responses to that pandemic was very slow, very negligible because we are dealing with a lot of, for example, like governments that who still have very genderly biased idea about the transmission, the method of transmission of HIV.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So there was a new organization called UNAIDS that emerged in 1994. Right. So it's the WHO was just one organization, but now it's learning to partner with other organizations, other funding bodies, and we are also seeking other pathways to deal with problems in the world.
I think that's what I do love about reading your work is I get a whole new understanding of history and society at the time. Yeah, so let's take a break.
Yeah, sure.
And when we come back, I want to ask you about how you got here because you were once a doctor, not just a historian.
All right, thank you.
Hey, if you have enjoyed the Taiwan Take and would like to support Ghost Island Media, we take monthly donations on Patreon. We're at patreon.com/Taiwan. And please give us a good rating on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. This helps other people find the show. All right, thank you. And back to the show.
Hey, welcome back to the show. This is Game Changers with Emily Y. Wu. This is where I talk to cool, young, hip people of Taiwan who's doing important work in the world. Today, we've been sitting here with Dr. Harry Wu, doctor, PhD, MD, and a master. You weren't always a historian. You started as a medical doctor. 20 years ago, you were a resident doctor at a hospital in Taiwan. What prompted you to do the switch?
Right. It was more or less like a family business. My dad is a psychiatrist. He's still practicing. And I've got a twin brother who is a psychiatrist now, right? I don't want to be their colleagues, right? So I think that I can perhaps try something else. I only spent my time in the hospital for 1 year, a little bit more than 1 year. But when I was in the hospital, I realized that there were a lot of cross-cultural issue things I should deal with. I was fascinated about Freud's work. So I registered a master's program in psychoanalysis. But there was a module in my master's course that was really fascinating. It's called Freud in Context. Actually, this was a history class.
Freud in Context.
In context. Freud in Context is, for example, like how did Freud's theory emerge? Under what circumstances? He was a Jewish person living in anti-Semitism, a society, right? We analyze his relationship with his family. He has got a very loving mother, a very strict dad, and then how that kind of thing influenced him to develop his theories. So it's actually all about stories that we were reading. And I got really carried away by this aspect of science. So I thought, this is what I want. Kind of found my way to become a history student.
Uh-huh. Right?
So this is how the story began.
For audience members who do want to seek help, I think many of us have spoken to professionals.
Mm-hmm.
How would you advise the audience member to find the best suitable mental health professional for them?
All right. Everyone has the opportunity to develop something that is mentally distressing, right?
Yeah.
And so first we need to know that, well, this is very normal. But how to really find a suitable therapist, that depends on how you can co-work with this person, whether or not this therapist is available, when you are also available, whether or not this person is a psychiatrist, a psychologist, or a counselor. They have different approaches, different styles, and you need to find that the very style that suits you the most.
Right? Actually, maybe this is a good time to explain the difference between the three.
All right, okay.
Psychiatrist, psychologist, and the counselor.
So basically the training programs are different. And first, you need to make sure that they have received professional and serious training, right, before you seek help, right?
Psychiatrist, medically trained. They didn't prescribe you with medicine.
Yeah, that's right. Although in some societies, some clinical psychologists, they can also prescribe medicine. And in Taiwan, it's very different, right? So you need to find the right ways to study these people you want to approach, whether or not their training background these backgrounds are official, right? The credentials are important, right?
So the type of credentials, whether they could give you clinical help in one capacity or another, and whether you can co-work with them.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And so now if you want to have your therapeutic program successful, right, you need to work with this person, right, and to make sure that you are on the same page, right? And then what else?
And that could be sharing life experiences so they know where you're coming from, they know your perspectives.
When you are speaking to this person, that you feel that you are very relaxed, comfortable, that you can totally be yourself in front of this person, that's the right person you want to work with.
Okay. Right. Yeah, yeah. I think it is quite tough to find a really good match. I think it does take a little while, especially if you're in a city or a county with not so many doctors.
Yeah, that's right. It is difficult, yeah. But we need to also bear in mind that we are not lonely, that a lot of people are having very similar problems. Now I have, you also have it, right? And so we are living in the world that everyone is connected and you are never alone.
What are you going to publish next that we should look forward to?
I hope that in 2 years that the book will come out.
The one on Hong Kong?
On Hong Kong.
And also, for those who read Mandarin, you do have a collection of other books in Mandarin.
That's right, yeah. They are not serious academic books. They are travel guides. There are some like prose collections, right? And a few others.
You're just a very productive person. Well, thank you so much. Now, before we let you go, there's one question we ask everybody, which is, of your accomplishments so far, how much was given to you versus how much did you have to fight for?
I really have to fight for a lot of things. For example, like stage fright, right? Oh. This is something that but I do find a way to solve that problem is I find my world in music, right? This is very different when I'm performing. I don't have that kind of fright.
Right, we didn't get to cover this because you also are your pianist, your singer, your songwriter.
Right. So I need to recall that the experience when I'm performing music and then that kind of feedback given by the audience, I don't feel nervous anymore.
Well, you live a really holistic life.
Right.
So thank you so much again for coming and sharing all of this with us. Again, as I still believe this so much that whenever I read your work, it just gives me such a more and diverse understanding of history. And thank you so much.
You're welcome. And thank you for having me. And welcome back to Tainan, at least for good food.
Yes, yes. Thank you. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Please do look up Dr. Harry Wu's work if you're also working in the same field. And as for me, my name is Emily Wai Wu, and you're watching Taiwan Plus. Follow and subscribe to Taiwan Plus on all our channels. We'll see you next time.
The video version of this interview was broadcasted on Taiwan Plus, the TV channel. We'll have a link for you in the show notes. I'm your host and producer, Emily Wai Wu. Our associate producer, who also helped with scripting, is Ting Ye. Researcher is Min Chow. Assistants are Gerald Williams and Teresa Yang. Podcast editing by Dino Lin. Our director for the video shoot was Leticia Fan. Kaylee Emerson was our post-production supervisor. Video editing by Emma Chow and Vivi Wong, with additional production support by Elaine Lai. Thank you for the executives and colleagues at Taiwan Plus, Shirley Kang, Callie Kuo, Eric Yang, and Jenny Luo. See you next time.